So the envelope's addressed to a business. Maybe your company, maybe the EIN for some side venture you'd honestly forgotten about. And the letter says the IRS made changes to your tax return. And there's a number on it you never calculated.
CP-220.
CP-220.
And the part people don't clock right away is it isn't asking you anything.
Right. It's already assessed. That's the single most important sentence in the whole article. ACP-2000 proposes a change and waits for your answer. ACP-220 is the IRS telling you the change is posted to the account, and here's the bill.
Okay, say that more simply for me. Assessed versus proposed. What actually changes for the listener?
Your moves change. With a proposal, you argue before it becomes real. With a CP-220, it's already real. So your three doors are pay it, get penalties abated, or get the adjustment corrected. And the burden of proof sits on you now, not on them.
And the deadline?
The pay-by date printed on the notice. That exact date. There's no separate statutory window for a CP-220 itself, which trips people up. They go looking for their 30 days, and there isn't one. After that date, the failure to pay penalty keeps running at 0.5% a month. Interest compounds daily, and the automated system queues up the next notice.
0.5% a month, daily compounding interest. Okay. What made the IRS do this in the first place?
A handful of things. Big one in 2026 is a processed 941X. Somebody filed an amended payroll return, often an employee retention credit claim, and the IRS processed it differently, reduced it, or reversed it after an exam. Then, failure to deposit penalties. That's the classic. Deposits late, short, or applied to the wrong quarter.
Wrong quarter.
Yeah, and that one's sneaky because a misapplied deposit makes one quarter look overpaid and the next one look short. The CP-220 is just the IRS's correction. Also, exam adjustments. An exam of a 941, 940, 1120, or 1065 closes, and the CP-220 is the bill that follows the report.
Wait, back up. If someone's a W-2 employee and this lands on their kitchen table,
check the addressee line. A CP-220 goes to an EIN, not a Social Security number. So if you're a W-2 employee holding one, it's tied to a business you own or used to operate. An LLC, a short-lived thing with one employee. An ERC claim filed under the company name. If the IRS changed your personal 1040, that's a CP-11 or a CP-12. Completely different notices, different playbooks.
And there are lookalikes in the business family, too.
Two worth ruling out. CP-210 is the same adjustment family, but usually a refund or no change. CP-161 is a business balance due with no changes at all. You filed, you didn't pay in full, they're billing what you reported. And then there's CP-220J, which, despite the number, isn't a return adjustment at all.
What is it?
It demands the Affordable Care Act employer shared responsibility payment, and it follows a letter 226J you either agreed to or never answered. If your notice has the J on the end, that's a different article chain entirely, and your dispute options are narrower than they were at the 226J stage.
Let's do the ignore path. What happens if this just sits in a drawer?
It feeds the automated collection sequence. Reminder notices first. CP-163 and similar. Just the balance restated with more penalty and interest. Then CP-504B, which is the business intent to levy. At that point, the IRS can take a state tax refund owed to the business, and a federal lien becomes a realistic next step. Then, CP-297A, or letter 1058, the final notice.
CP-504B, then CP-297A, or letter 1058. And the final one starts a clock.
30 days, and that's your collection due process window. You request the hearing on Form 12153. Miss it, and they can levy without another warning. business bank accounts, and funds sit 21 days before they actually leave. Accounts receivable, other assets. Releases happen, but it's much harder than prevention.
There's a line in here about IRS staffing I want you to address, because I think people are quietly hoping nobody's home.
The workforce shrank roughly 27% in 2025. That makes reaching a human harder. It does nothing to the notices. The whole sequence is generated by automated systems that never stopped running. The machine escalates on schedule, whether anybody's read your file or not.
Okay, so options.
More than the two printed on the notice. Pay in full by the date, which stops the failure to pay penalty and interest right there. Installment agreement, if the change is correct, but cash flow can't absorb it. Setup fees vary. Penalties and interest keep running while you pay. And larger business balances mean financial disclosure on Form 433B. Penalty abatement, which is free to request. Disputing the adjustment. Hardship status. Currently not collectible, where collection pauses, but the debt and interest stay and the IRS re-reviews periodically.
Tell me the honest, hard part on abatement.
It's means tested by history and facts. Not automatic because you asked. First-time abatement is the clean 3-year history route. Reasonable cause is separate. Illness, disaster, reliance on bad professional advice. And that one can work without a clean history. And starting summer 2026, there's an automatic exemption from penalty that grants similar relief with no request. But nobody can tell you in advance how the IRS lands on your facts.
Fair. And if the change is just plain wrong?
Then you're proving it. Pull the business account transcript for that exact period and match it, line by line, against the notice's changes section, the return as filed, your deposit confirmations, and any 941X. Deposit applied to the wrong quarter, proof of date and amount usually sorts it. If it came out of an exam you never really participated in, audit reconsideration lets them reopen with new documentation. Penalties only. Request in writing or use Form 843.
And a dispute doesn't freeze collections.
No, that's the trap. The collection side doesn't pause because the adjustment side is reading your letter. If notices keep escalating while a legitimate dispute sits there unanswered, the Taxpayer Advocate Service exists for exactly that squeeze.
One more. Is this the business's debt or mine?
Depends on the entity. Sole proprietor or single-member LLC, it's effectively yours. Corporation or multi-member, the entity owes it. But the trust fund portion of unpaid payroll tax can be assessed against you personally through the trust fund recovery penalty if you controlled where the money went. That's the piece I'd want looked at hardest.
When can somebody just handle this alone?
Small change, you can see exactly why they made it. You can pay by the date. Or it's a single penalty and the business has a clean 3-year history. A first-time abatement request there is often one phone call. A straightforward plan on a modest balance, same. Where it gets expensive is a 5-figure ERC reversal with penalties attached, payroll periods with trust fund exposure, several periods adjusted at once, a revenue officer already assigned, or a CP504B that showed up while you were still deciding.
Because of sequencing.
Penalty request, appeal, payment terms. The order you do them in affects what you end up paying. And mistakes there are painful to unwind.
So, next 24 hours. Find 3 things on the CP220. The tax form and period, the changes to your tax return list, and the pay-by date. Write that date somewhere you'll actually see it.
Then gather the return for that period. 941, 940, 1120, or 1065. Any 941X or ERC paperwork, deposit confirmations, and the business account transcript if you can pull it. And if you want an enrolled agent to read the notice with you before that date passes, the review's free and confidential. 888-825-7779.
Every option still open at the CP220 stage. That stops being true later.